Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker, Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? And get your vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There's some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
And I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Happy Thursday. Happy coup-iversary. How are we feeling today, Millie? Not well, bitch.
No, I am a COVID bitch. Yes, right now. But
we think, but you can't get a test because it's just so easy to get a test 2.5, 2 years into the pandemic, right?
Well, I did get tested. It's easy to get tested. It's not
very easy to
get
someone
results.
Right. It's very easy to get somebody right on the streets of New York to shove something up your nose, but then you got to wait 5 days.
Are you going
to
get it back? Who are those people? Is it a legitimate company? What happened? I don't know.
Oh God, what are they doing? They're going to like catch my male relatives in a cold case crime. And I thought it was a COVID test.
Well, I did. Do you know Rainbow, like clothing stores?
Of course.
Yeah. So I did my second PCR test in a closed like Rainbow type store.
Oh my God.
Oh, that is bleak. That is bleak. There's a lot of things like that. Just like the graveyard.
Doing amazing.
Yeah. It's like the falling American empire, commercial real estate vacancies now turn into pop-up testing.
Right. After the Halloween, after the spirit Halloweens leave, then the pop-up testing centers show up.
Yeah.
It's good they were available.
Well, and you know what? We were talking about some HBO Max like reboots and stuff. I picked a great time to start watching Station 11, y'all. Started watching it a few days ago. It's great, but Jesus.
I've rejected that. I can't be more anxious in my leisure time.
That's why I haven't watched Yellow Jackets, but everybody says it's amazing.
Everyone says Yellow Jackets is amazing. Station 11 is good because it's like, what is the role of art in a crisis? Oh. You know, that's kind of the overall message and a lot of other stuff. But that's just like the pandemic has happened and the world has ended. Mm-hmm. And then they like do Shakespeare shows. And like, so it's just cool.
Yeah. I didn't realize that was what it was about.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it is like a pandemic like COVID, but 99% survive like mortality. But then it goes like 20 years after that, there's like a Shakespeare troop that travels and blah, 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 blah.
Oh, maybe so there's like that up this weekend.
Repopulation happening and re-economizing.
Yeah. So
they have to pay to go to the Shakespeare shows to people.
No, but it's really interesting, which is there's a lot of parallels. And I will say the first episode is when it starts happening, but they call the people who survived the thing pre-pans and all the kids who were born after the pandemic post-pans.
Wow.
So there's like a trauma. So there's like a battle between like the younger and the older generations of like
people
who held that
real.
Trauma. It's really cool, but crazy.
Can I ask if there's any like blood or gross stuff in it?
I don't think. Yellow Jackets. I did hear that.
Yes, Yellow Jackets.
Stuff,
there's
so a lot. Why I can't watch it. It's like
that's
too
why I'm nervous.
Violent.
This is more like. Like, I think one time they hunt a deer, like they're hunting and cutting up a deer, but like, that's whatever.
That happens.
But it's more of like, you do like hear coughing or there is hospital. So it's triggering in that way of like, it's a more extreme version of COVID for sure. But it isn't like bloody or gory or anything like that.
It's a little bit.
I can handle
something being like emotionally bleak way better than I can handle it being like violent and
same. Same.
Yeah,
there's like some. I'm not going to say there's not.
I can only watch something if it's emotionally bleak. Speaking of which, today
she something aligned with how she's.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, in the Netflix 10 limited series on the coup, starring who?
Well,
Matthew
great.
McConaughey as Shaman. That's cute.
Oh, man, that's a little so on the nose. That is a little on the nose. But today, of course, officially marks the 1-year anniversary since thousands of Americans seized the U.S. Capitol in the biggest and most deadly terror attack on our nation's capital, on our nation, actually, since 9/11. So we had a really awesome conversation with Kate and Elise yesterday where we actually successfully tried to be optimistic, believe it or not, about the possibilities available to Democrats in Congress, about how they can be creative and use the tools that they already have. There are some post-Civil War tools available here that they have not creatively flexed yet, just to expedite this process and figure out what's happening. We also had a chat about what the media needs to do better. Obviously, this morning, we've been exposed to a lot of images we haven't seen for a year. I mean, we talk about the attack all the time. Whenever somebody else is arrested or charged, we see their picture. We see their mugshot. We see their picture on January 6th. But I personally have found myself pretty impacted by the saturation of today. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'm just concerned that like it isn't going to make enough people care. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe people will care today. But what about when the Republicans are going to take the House? And what about the fact that the committee is... Look, the committee is trying. They're trying, obviously. I'm not going to like knock them for not trying, but they're moving like a little too slowly, like as if there's not a deadline when they might lose Congress or like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't understand why they're not acting. It's Amanda, I said this to you, it's almost like they're functioning as if the world still moves at the same pace it did in 1970.
Yeah. We did talk about this yesterday. It's like the way that these, like when the legal system was built, it was like, what do you need to expedite a subpoena? Like send an email. It's like, you don't need to leave time for the passenger pigeon and like the horse-drawn carriage to get you that. Like we should have laws that specifically mandate the expediting subpoenas that relate to insurrection. That seems obvious.
Right. You would think that like overthrowing the government or trying to overthrow the government, maybe that's the word we need to use more. They tried to overthrow the government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that's not like number one priority in everybody's mind.
I mean, the thing is, like, there's nothing we can do right now. I mean, like, the person that is really in charge is like Merrick Garland, and they're doing their stuff behind the scenes. And I like to think they have this huge criminal case that they're putting together that they're going to drop and like have a criminal case against Donald Trump. But I mean, all that we can do is keep putting pressure on them. But I just don't want people to feel like they're not doing enough.
No, like, He came out yesterday and he said, you know, he gave a speech that was considered pretty serious and people were like happy with, you know, the tone.
Yeah.
But that none of that, like, that's a speech. None of that matters if the consequences aren't there. And he says, you know, we're trying to resolve the easier cases first, but the
that
time
seems wrong.
Matters.
Yeah.
Like the time in which you hold these people accountable matters. And for, okay, I will say, they don't even know who, someone was telling me they live in DC, that they had camera footage of like near the DNC and RNC with the pipe bombs. No one came to her for 3 months to get that footage. And she was like, it's gone after 30 days. It's like, why aren't you going immediately the next day to get that footage from all the people in the area?
Yeah.
And it's just, okay, it almost seems like Mueller report-esque, where their own lack of aggression will lead them to not have a case.
Yeah, it is this like overall trend that we've been talking about Democrats being reactive and playing by the old rules and, you know, not really playing offense. Even, but this is like extreme, like they're not even playing aggressive defense, which is, you know, crazy. And it's not like, I mean, I know sometimes I think in my head that it's helpful if Democrats had their own media machine, like Fox News, like really aggressive, really blowing shit out of proportion. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's like for the betterment or like healthy like democracy, if we need that. But at the same time, I wish we had some semblance of something that's like getting a strong message across about why these things are important and what they mean. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that you know, they've never flown in a Confederate flag before, not even during the Civil War. Like they would never even do that during the Civil War.
That should continually be making people so furious. Like that should...
Yeah,
where's the fire under their ass to like hustle? Yeah, like
nowhere.
It's kind of like the FDA, where like they didn't approve certain vaccines or they didn't go and be aggressive with stuff because they're used to the bureaucracy and they want to play it safe and all this stuff. But it's just like, if you're not going to use the tools, you know, like
exactly,
now is the time to expedite stuff or to be aggressive. And then it is just like allowing for room for if you're like forward-thinking or progressive to feel like hopeless. If you're not sure you're uninformed, then that seeps in misinformation. So
right. Just to make it look like you're doing something. Pretend. Yeah. Put on a show.
I mean, that's what the Fox News people do. You know, they don't make any policies. They don't do shit, but they have strong messaging and they get that across, and they fucking have other countries that like inundate our social media with their fucking messaging. So that's what I mean of like, I wish we had a little bit of that.
I mean, Millie, what you're saying is like, you're saying, oh, they shouldn't blow things out of proportion. I don't really think that like you need to blow things out of proportion. Like you can just state the facts and they sound pretty bad. I, again, it goes to that asymmetry between their message of fear and, you know, xenophobia and don't listen to the government, all the bullshit. Between like versus a message of sort of like nuance and rationality and, you know, going according to norms, like that's just not as captivating as getting, you know, a cult. A small cult is more effective than, you know, just a bunch of loosely sane people who have a similar belief but aren't that motivated because they're not cultified.
Yeah. I mean, so, I think the problem is that the Republicans and their actions, like they've just expanded the Overton window of like what's normal and them being like mostly okay with sedition and insurrection. They've changed the status quo to that. So the media just covers that as if like, they're letting that change happen. And Democrats are sort of letting them guide the way there. They're just letting it happen where we do have a few people like Eric Swalwell comes to mind, who is super aggressive on Twitter and is constantly every day infuriated about the Capitol attack and pointing something out about it. And we need more people to be doing that for sure.
You know what I think? I think Democrats like to get the last word and Republicans, and in life, I think people always want like the last word, but really it's better to have the first word. Republicans always have the first word. They're always setting up the frame of how we're going to discuss any conversation. Yes. And then our conversations become about responding to their completely out of the realm of what is appropriate conversations. Mm-hmm. So we need to like start getting the first word message first before they can message. Don't just respond to their like lies and be like, no, it's a lie. Like say your thing.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, they've done so many studies where it's like, once people see something, it's very hard for them, even if it's been corrected multiple times. So I think that's a really good point.
And it is a good point in two of like, it's once people see something, but also the way to battle misinformation is to not just say that that is wrong, but to provide like the facts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's how we battle it. And again, like it's a bummer. I remember like all these politicians sharing their accounts and even seeing videos of Mitt Romney run for his life and all these things. And these people were actually scared. And we're very, very, very lucky that no one died that day. Yeah. Like, people did die, but
that they didn't murder politicians
on TV what we're very lucky to see that we didn't
they
see.
Had and Liz that was Cheney. By luck. I had Liz Cheney on The Daily this morning and they asked her like, is that story true that like Jim Jordan was like, ladies, can we help you? And she was like, get the fuck off me. You did this. And she's like, yes, that is accurate.
I mean, we should talk about Liz Cheney.
We will. She's on my list. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about Liz Cheney in a second. But Andy Kim, the representative from New Jersey, I believe, tweeted out a thread of all of the Republicans who condemned Trump and his lies on March 6th. And it's all January the people 6th. Who now, sorry, March 6th, what the hell? January 6th. And now you can, all of those people who condemned him are like doing his bidding. And they're now saying that the insurrectionists were defending democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just, you can't trust one word they say, no matter when they say it. It's just,
It's difficult because there are people, like we said, like then you have Merrick Garland, like these people literally are contradicting what they said 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. And then you have Merrick Garland and like other people, like other Democrats running and acting like if it's politics as usual. And mm-hmm. it's really, really, really not. And that's frustrating. And again, I just think, you know, I'm, you know, I love AOC. Like, I think she's great. Her like January 6th things like really impacted me hearing her talk and all that stuff. And like, mm-hmm. fuck, like, I wish that I know that like, I'm not in it, so I don't know, but I wish that she was more empowered and like the Democrats in Congress and even in Senate could like learn from her because she does. I'm like, if we had more people that had that kind of messaging, and it's been growing, you know, we have Cori Bush now,
Pramila Jayapal.
So, you know, we do, but it's just like, yeah, that's the example of mm-hmm. what it looks like when, you know, there's a strong message, right. strong social media and all that stuff. And I wish there was an infrastructure for that within our party.
And if 80-year-old congressional leaders don't know how to employ that messaging, fine, then give them the mic. These other younger, more charismatically that like know how to communicate and know how to keep the heat up.
Or like give it to your staff who is knows how to tweet.
Yeah.
Like Sheldon Whitehouse has a great Twitter. I don't know if he's the one tweeting, but the messaging is just very clear. And like, if more people were on his messaging, you would, I mean, he has obviously his beat about the courts and the money. Mm-hmm. So that should be louder. You know, that's mm-hmm. obviously very important. You have Roe versus Wade for who knows how much longer. Yeah. So it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's really depressing though.
I mean, that's by design though, right? They wanted to press us and make us feel, but like really it's frustrating because Democrats and the left are winning the culture wars. Mm-hmm. Like Republicans will never win again, like culture wars. The majority of people don't care about gay marriage anymore.
Yeah.
Majority of people really don't care about abortion. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like you know, there's things that hold them.
We talked about this. We talked about this a lot yesterday, but it's like, because Republicans have had structural advantages for so long, it has magnified like how popular their ideas actually are and how much they are winning the culture war. And like they haven't for a very, very long time. They just, because of gerrymandering and lying and lack of ethics, they've just been able. So let's talk about what Republicans are up to these days. They're basically acting like it's just a normal sixth day of January. Most of them are like, get an easy way out and are dodging everything. They're at the funeral of former Georgia Senator Johnny Isaacson. So they're in Atlanta. But one Republican who obviously is sort of standing out is Liz Cheney. She's somebody whose political persona has been, I'd say, completely reshaped by January 6th. Liz Cheney, the Republican from Wyoming, was pressured by her party to apologize for voting to impeach Donald Trump and ultimately removed from her number three spot in Republican leadership when she did not apologize for that vote. She's one of just two Republicans who were approved to serve on the House Select Committee investigating the attack. And she's maintained the hard line that Donald Trump is a danger to the country and a disgrace to the Republican Party. It's very strange that this anti-abortion, pro-gun, warmongering daughter of Dick Cheney has come to be like a symbol of American democracy. So what do we think her kind of political future will be? Sammy, you have a very disturbing theory to me.
I mean, it makes perfect sense that Liz Cheney is one of the only people who is capable of, I think, like making this bigger than the Democrats would make it, because she's not afraid to go to the mattresses as the Democrats are. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not afraid she's not afraid to like leak shit to the media. She's not afraid to say things so that it sparks action. And that's the difference that with her and the Democrats is that she's willing to employ Republican strategies against Republican fascism. And my prediction is, like, I hate to say this, but I feel that she is possibly going to make the difference between accountability and not accountability. And if I'm her, I'm thinking I want to save democracy and then become president of the democracy. And I think if it gets to a certain point, there are people who would, I think there are a lot of Democrats who would vote her in over another option, you know, like a DeSantis or a, who the fuck knows who they'll run? Like, you really never know who they'll put up. But
I think she...
You think Liz Cheney would win Democrats?
Yes.
If it was her versus Trump or
yeah,
like...
But she's not going to run as a Democrat.
But how Democrats would vote for her.
She could run as an independent.
Yeah, and Democrat. Like, I'm not... Like, I wouldn't vote for her, but I know
if
that...
If it was her versus a fascist, a person who...
No, but you're talking about a primary. Why would Democrats be voting in a primary?
Oh, no, I'm not... No, I'm saying she could run as an independent. Or she could, like...
But there would still be a Democratic nominee.
I just feel like there'd be, center white people who would vote for her.
There's always some, yeah.
Right, but the Democratic nominee, depending who they are, they could be someone who's, like, so uninspiring that it could just become, like, apparent that you need to vote for Liz. Like, let's say you're seeing the polling and it's, like, 30-30-30. I actually think more Democrats would vote for Liz Cheney because they're afraid. Sort of like how they went for Biden over anybody else.
Yeah, and, over Bernie.
And, like, feel that if Liz Cheney had 4 years, I think the first 4 years, she would probably be, like, building Democratic stuff up rather than, like, being extra partisan, is my guess, because she would want to be able to win again rather than, like, go into fascism again.
Yeah, I mean, I think she has a much better chance if she drops some of her anti-abortion stuff. Then I think she has a much easier path.
But she's not going
Roe versus Wade is gone. She doesn't ever have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, she could just be like, it doesn't matter. It's a court decision.
No, they're not going to let it. Democrats aren't going to let it go and let, like, a woman running for president not have to talk about it.
Yeah, but it doesn't, like, matter. You know what I mean? Like, most of the country isn't seeing these conversations.
I think that the reason why she's so brave is because her dad's Dick Cheney. Like, she doesn't have shit to lose. She'll never get discredited for anything, and she doesn't need, like,
money.
She doesn't need money, but she doesn't need, like, she will always have a sanction of Republicans that will support her just because of her family legacy, and because of her dad's Dick Cheney and all that. And I think she's not going to get that, like,
right. If she were anyone but Liz Cheney, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Well, she wouldn't. She would fall in line with Trump.
Yeah, no, I just mean she would not have survived what her party did to her. Yeah.
It just shows how much money and power free you from influence.
Exactly.
And part of why Trump was not free from influence is because he didn't have any money. And that's why Mitt Romney can stand up, because he doesn't need this job. Like, he doesn't need this job. Liz Cheney doesn't need this job. And they're able to say, my reputation in history is worth more to me than, like, what's going to happen in the next year. Like, and that is something that you can only really achieve if you have, like, money and status on your own.
Yeah, but I think that's, like, the bad part of politics, right? Is, like,
true.
I think a good result of
it's a
bad
rare
thing
because
like, on the opposite, it's like, all these people need stimulus. All these people need child tax credit. All these things that happen, but because of somebody who, like Joe Manchin, who doesn't care about his reputation, doesn't need the money, doesn't need any, or actually is needing the money, but is getting it from coal mine, whatever.
Right.
Like, it's kind of opposite of that.
I'm not really espousing this as, like, my ideal situation. It's more like we're in a really tough spot because the solutions that were on yesterday that the Democrats could do, those are good solutions if they could happen, but they can't happen. So what's, like, the option? And I don't know. I feel that, you know, as, like, idealistic as I am, and I would love for all of these things to pass and, like, you know, for us to have that vision that we saw in the 10 hours after, you know, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock won and thinking we were going to get everything we wanted or hoping that. I just feel like you have to work within, like, the pragmatism of what's happening. And it's like, there's no, like, if Liz Cheney is the person who can, like, make a difference, like, I guess it gotta be her, you know?
It's tough because I see what you're saying, but then I also see, like, the other point of view of, like, well, if we work pragmatically, like,
I don't mean, like, progressives should be working like pragmatically to find a middle ground with Liz Cheney. No. I mean, like, the pro-democracy people need to Like, we're never going to get healthcare or any of these things if we're under fascism. We're going to be like forced to birth babies.
But do these things these things can coexist, like pursuing democratic objectives and supporting Liz Cheney on the House Select Committee investigating Republicans. I mean, these things.
Yeah, but those things aren't going to happen. Like, the only way to, I think, at this point, get anything done, unless Joe Manchin gives in and changes the filibuster rules on voting rights or something, I don't see how we will ever get anything ever again. Unless, like, the Republicans will probably win the House. And after that, like, what's next?
But what's this have to do with Liz Cheney?
Because Liz Cheney, I think, is able to, like, PR the situation in a way that might actually change the public opinion.
I see.
I don't know. I feel like you're giving Liz Cheney so much.
I think she's one of the few people who can actually, like...
You mean like between now and midterms?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about, like, she has, I think, more ability to sway those people who need to be swayed, like those middle kind of on the fence people that Republicans cannot be in power ever again.
Okay. Got it.
That's really my point. It's just that I think she has like media power, not like.
And you think Democrats need to do more to harness Liz Cheney's media power or just not?
I do. Okay. I do is what I'm saying. I think like Democrats are not effective communicators.
Do you think she wants to even like?
Yes, I do. I think to her, I think top priority. I don't think there's any part of her that's like, oh, I'd really be better under the fascism, especially not now.
No, but she's a Republican. She is a Republican. She's not on the Democrat side for this. She would say she's on the Republican side and just the people that don't believe in her.
But she's
what you're saying, but I'm like, you're giving her so much and I am don't got none.
I know I'm giving her a lot, but I'm giving her a lot because when you we're not going to be able to do it on our own. There's just no way. So
what is it?
Save democracy.
Okay.
Like not go into that's literally where I am right now. I'm not talking about policies of, you know, us getting everything we want in terms of climate change. I'm talking about literally us not living in a fascist country.
Yeah. I mean, she could definitely take the mic more often on her own. And I think she does, but yeah, I think like lots of ads should include maybe like even ads around the midterms for Democrats. Like, look, it's even Republicans are saying this is not acceptable. I've had enough of Liz Cheney for today. So we're going to think about we're of course today thinking about the officers who fell that day, but we're also thinking about another group of patriots, the women who outed their insurrectionist exes to the FBI after seeing them storm the Capitol. I think on a recent podcast, Millie, you anointed these people person of the year, which inspired this segment, but I'm going to read a few headlines from the last year that made me smile. Man messages Bumble match from Capitol siege. Woman responds, we are not a match, calls authorities. Feds. Veteran arrested for Capitol riots was turned in by ex-wife. Ex-girlfriend leads FBI to Capitol riot suspect who called her a moron in text. Bumble dating app trips up another Capitol riot suspect. This girl was amazing. She basically just like chatted with this guy and was coaxing him to send her information and pictures, just like keep hanging himself. And then she sent it all along.
Like, that's finally, so cool, MAGA.
Right, exactly. Like she literally was like, what else do you see? Whose office are you in? When did you get there? Who are you with? Like,
oh my God, amazing work.
Oh, incredible work. And finally, a 25-year-old from Tampa says it's her, quote, civic duty to look for rioters on dating apps. And Bumble did, I think they did something weird in the immediate aftermath of the Capitol riot. Like they were trying to prevent some of this reporting, but eventually they basically like were able to capture anyone that had posted pictures that looked like a Capitol riot and removed them from the app.
Did I tell you I got a cease and desist from Bumble?
For no! What?
I run a satire site, and somebody wrote a headline that was like, the satire site for people of color, and someone wrote a headline that said like, this Bumble dating feature shows you which people were actually at Black Lives Matter protests and which one just posted the black square. And
that's Bumble, so funny.
And before they became IPOs, Yeah. They were they sent me the cease and desist to my old apartment because they're super sensitive when they got publicly traded. Girl boss.
Yeah, they have a lot of money to send you cease and desist for every.
Yeah, so we had it.
True.
Yeah, but thankfully I got like some friends at the Onion to help me out with their legal team just to be like,
wow, nice. Look at you.
Yeah, it's, I know, this is parody.
Yeah.
Or yeah, like a reasonable person. Yeah,
but a reasonable person would know it's a joke.
Yeah.
Apparently there's still an insurrectionist loose on the Upper East Side. Like he was arrested, but he's still just like back on the Upper East Side and he's just not allowed to go to DC, I think. But
was he like somebody's kid, like a politician's kid or something?
No, he's like an adult. Like he's just like a guy. His name is Samuel Fisher and he appears to be, he's 33.
Okay.
So I'm here.
My favorite character from the insurrection was the person.
That was another game I was going to maybe ask us to play.
Oh, really? Sorry.
Do it. Who's your favorite? No, I didn't put it on here. So I'm glad you volunteered it. Who was your
favorite? Well, because this one. Okay. Remember the young girl in her 20s who got Nancy Pelosi's laptop?
Yes.
And was trying to sell it. But it was just a laptop in the conference room where they do like PowerPoints. So she was like, I mean, this is so government secrets. And it's just like PowerPoints about like health benefits or something that they do like for orientation. And she got snitched on by her ex-girlfriend because she's like bisexual or something.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
So that one, I was waiting for that one. I didn't hear it.
I think favorite's the woman. I think my favorite's the woman who took the private jet and was like, I'm not going to get arrested. I'm white and rich on Twitter. And then she did.
60 days in jail. 60 days in jail.
Not enough, but whatever.
Not enough, but whatever.
I mean, it's days to think about what you did and how you maybe shouldn't have.
No, she's going to jail. She said, listen, Jenna Ryan's on a diet. She said she's going to come out
ripped.
She's going
to get fit in jail.
Yeah, we voted her most likely to succeed, most coup participant most likely to succeed in prison.
Yeah.
This sounds she's using it as like a rehab rather than.
She thinks she doesn't know what she's getting into.
Well,
at least Ghislaine Maxwell is honest about what's going on in there.
Ghislaine Maxwell's husband broke up with her.
I know.
Over the phone.
So funny.
I didn't know that she was remarried. Like either. That was shocking to me.
To a much younger guy, too.
Well, there's a trend.
To close today, we're going to pivot to a non-insurrection. Unless we have any closing insurrection thoughts. I have none.
I think it's important that we keep talking about it because Republicans don't want to. And it's just something that was so crazy that happened in front of our eyes that I'll never forget.
And exactly. Like, don't be gaslit into our listeners know, but in case we have any new ones this week that are getting used to the vibe on the podcast, like, don't let Republicans gaslight you. This was as bad as everybody is saying. And
worse, honestly.
We can't forget it. Worse. Absolutely.
I'll tell you the emotional state I compare it to. The days before the pandemic, when it was apparent that it was going to be like the 2 weeks before the pandemic, where it was like apparent we were not avoiding this. And it was going to be a pandemic, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't here yet. And we were just, and you're like waiting and you're waiting. And I'm like, okay, well, can it just happen already so that we can commence our year of hell? Mm-hmm. And I know some people thought that was going to be 2 weeks, but there was just no way. I mean, I remember how I felt.
2 weeks, like, to crush the curve.
I remember feeling like, can we just start getting the cases going so we can get it over with? And like, go live in it. That's how I feel about the state we are in pre-fascism. I hate this feeling of like it's impending. There's nothing you can do to stop it, but or like you personally are powerless to stop it. But it's like if no one does anything, it's gonna come.
Right. I mean, it feels like the pandemic. It feels like climate change, and climate change is also coming. We're gonna close today with Millie's favorite theme, which is obnoxious man who wants to be coddled despite refusing to adhere to societal norms. We, of course, are talking about Novak Djokovic. I'm saying that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
I always embarrass myself with athletes. The number one ranked tennis player in the world was denied entry into Australia after a 10-hour standoff in the Melbourne airport yesterday. So this guy is unvaccinated. I guess he had not been super forthcoming previously, but it came out ahead of this. That he had not been vaccinated. And he has said some like anti-science stuff in the past. He seems like kind of a weird dude. And just ahead of the Australian Open, he believed he'd received a special medical exemption to play in the tournament. But this didn't necessarily translate into a medical exemption to the country's rules for entry. In order to enter Australia, you have to be fully vaccinated or quarantined for 14 days. Obviously, the tournament is before that. So Australians were furious hearing about the medical exemption. They have gone through it with COVID, obviously, and they got to 90% vaccination. And only recently have they been able to travel among their own states. So they were like, mm-hmm. what the fuck? And when Djokovic got to the airport, the federal government said, absolutely not. The state government where the tournament was held also then announced they wouldn't support his visa. Frankly, I mean, I think that Australians don't really like their prime minister. He seems like a little obnoxious, but I think he saw how popular sentiment in Australia was really against this guy coming in. So he then invoked the federal government's authority to deny entry. So Djokovic has no evidence that he can be there, because basically he's like, you can't just be exempted from playing in the tournament if we don't exempt you for coming into the country. But he's refusing to leave. The world's number one ranked tennis player is currently being held in an immigration detention hotel as his lawyers file a legal challenge to the visa cancellation. So he can stay there until Monday awaiting appeal. But basically the people are like, no, you can't come in. I don't know what he's expecting, but this seems like it was like a completely botched process. And now he's just refusing to accept that he will not be exempt from the rules. He even got like the president of Serbia got involved, and all these Serbians in Australia are like outside the airport
being like, let me play, even though, yeah. even though I am not. Okay. If I recall correctly, the last time I was paying attention to him was he was insulting Naomi Osaka for her not wanting to do press.
That was
so
him.
She got kicked out of an open because mm-hmm. she didn't want to do the questions from the press
after the game. Nothing Serena about playing not, the game.
Right.
Serena Williams has been fined for her outfits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. All right. And he gets to come in just unvaccinated, no problem. Even though Australia has been so strict. It's not like Sweden where it's like, okay, whatever, we don't really care that much. Yeah. They are so strict.
Yeah.
And they go into lockdown constantly. Yeah. And they're letting this asshole in.
Yeah.
No, I get that.
It's especially angering because of what he said about Naomi Osaka, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and that's like for way less.
He just like, the rules don't apply to me. They apply to everybody else, but they don't apply to me. Absolutely. Why wouldn't I be able to enter this country that explicitly says they don't want my infectious ass in here? And now he's going to like hunker down in this immigration hotel and try to cause an international incident. I mean, between this and have like... fun. The Ukrainian minister being mad at Emily in Paris. Did you hear about that?
Yes. I'm going to put that in the morning announcements, I think, tomorrow.
So why are they mad? They're mad because like, I think I fell asleep during this episode, but there's like a very like bad or problematic maybe portrayal of like a Ukrainian person who's shoplifting in the show. It's bad.
Honestly, when I watched it, I was like, this is very bad.
And I
don't even like, you know, I don't have no skin in the game. And I was like, this is very, very stereotypical. So much. What?
We have put the Ukrainians through too much.
Yeah, no, it's very stereotypical.
With holding arms.
Generic Eastern European, mm-hmm. like bad kind of skeevy vibes. And like, she couldn't speak properly and she like shoplifted and it was just like fucked up.
Oh, well, he's mad at Netflix.
Well, then, you know, Emily in Paris team needs to do what they did with the Golden Globes and fly out all the prime ministers and put them up in a 5-star hotel to get them unpissed at them.
I can't believe that actually, like, no one flagged that in the script, to be fully honest, that this is like a very
offensive.
I can't imagine that the Emily in Paris team is...
There was
contrived of like
culturally sensitive,
culturally sensitive writers. What I was going to say earlier is that, you know, the Prime Minister of Australia saw a moment where he could gain popularity. So all we have to do for Joe Biden to get more popular, on top of him forgiving student loans, he needs to do that before midterms. Mm. If he forgives student loans, brings back child tax credit, and we find one polarizing figure that one person that everyone hates. And he's like, you can't come back.
Yeah, we need a Djokovic or Emily in Paris for Joe Biden.
If we get Kid Rock to go to Mexico and then not let him back in, we could make up like a party cruise. We can. And then invite Kid Rock. And then Joe Biden's like, no, only vaccinated people back in this country. He'll get some popular, you know.
What if Ted Cruz went on a vacation?
He's done that.
Got a positive test And then Biden wanted to make him stay out.
Wouldn't he have to stay out anyway?
Like yeah, Biden, you have to.
He would totally try.
He would try that to would not stay out.
Okay.
And Biden.
So if you are in Mexico, you should invite Cancun Ted for a trip abroad. Infect him. Get real close.
At the Four Seasons.
Exactly. Oh, that is our show today. Millie, I hope you feel better.
Thanks.
I hope COVID doesn't catch any of us this weekend. I hope everybody is well and has a restful weekend. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
And I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com. Betches.